Welcome to Louisiana Considered. I'm Carl Lengel, a new daily show about South Louisiana from WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge, featuring the region's journalists, newsmakers, artists, and it's Louisiana at midday, so we'll be talking about food every now and then, too. We're live every Monday through Friday, today from the WWNO studios in New Orleans. Today, Gulf States Newsroom reporter Shalina Chudlani is here to discuss vaccination reluctance among healthcare workers. And New Orleans Business Alliance CEO Quentin Messer Jr. will join us a little bit later to look ahead to some positive news about Louisiana's forthcoming recovery from the pandemic and its economic fallout. A little tease for both WWNO and WRKF for you for the rest of the afternoon. It's a special day. It's the third Wednesday of the month. We will hear from the governor of Louisiana at 2 o'clock in our monthly program, Ask the Governor, a call-in show that allows you to pose questions directly to our governor. And coming up on All Things Considered this afternoon, there's a continuing rift in the GOP between Trump allies and those who are urging the party to move away from the former president. The rift is also playing out at the local level with censure votes for the Republicans who voted to impeach or convict Trump, and with early jockeying for the elections in 2022. Our Twitter feed this morning told you a little bit about some of the local news stories we are following today. The wintry mix in Louisiana, received at the beginning of the week, continues up until the weekend. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in this show. And other local news stories we're following include the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries warning of potential for fish kills resulting from this historic cold spell we are in. First up today from Louisiana Considered, while many people are clamoring to get a coronavirus vaccine, some are choosing not to get it right now. Vaccine hesitancy appears to be happening more within the Black community and among Black healthcare workers. Gulf State Newsroom's Shalina Chudlani with the newsroom talked with Black women in the healthcare field about what's guiding their choices. Here's the story.
Mary Williams is a strong believer in taking charge of her own health. In fact, the 50-year-old nurse from Clinton, Mississippi, hosts a podcast about it.
But one of my why is because of my mom and all.
Williams' mom had a heart attack when she was in her 60s. In a recent podcast episode, Williams talked about how her mom's white doctors didn't take the time to explain to her how to get better before she left the hospital.
Then they sent her home with some papers. Yep. So information is not enough. Sometimes you need people to walk things out with you.
There are many examples throughout history of Black patients being mistreated in the medical system. But Williams has been a nurse for over 20 years and says the examples she's seen firsthand are a bigger factor in her mistrust.
And I know what the behind the scenes look like. I know what the systemic racism is in healthcare.
So when it comes to coronavirus, Williams says she has no plans to get a vaccine. She wants to see more data first.
Right now, I just don't have the trust that I would feel comfortable getting it.
But this is somewhat of an emergency.
Gwendolyn Lyle, a nurse in Terry, Mississippi, says she was also hesitant. But she did her research and was reassured by prominent scientists who say the vaccine's safe and essential for stopping the spread.
We're at a point where we're going to have to trust somebody right now.
She prayed and then she got the vaccine. Coronavirus vaccine hesitancy is a national issue among healthcare workers. In a national survey of 2,500 healthcare workers in January, 15% of respondents decided not to get the vaccine. But among Black healthcare workers, 35% declined the shot. Dr. Fatima Stanford is a public health researcher at Harvard. She says a person's comfort in medicine is often tied to how they are treated in healthcare settings.
You would think that being in the healthcare system would allow our voices to be heard, but I've often found that, you know, I'm just another person with Black skin.
Stanford says trust can be built, but that depends on the messaging. For a study over the summer, Stanford and other doctors recorded messages about coronavirus precautions and sent them to more than 14,000 Black and Latino adults. Stanford said straightforward messages stuck with people more. So for vaccine messaging, she also suggests keeping it simple.
Not going into, and the doses should be this, and we're storing this at this temperature. It's like resonating for why it matters right now. You probably have some friends and family that have died. How do we help avoid that situation for you?
The study also found that Black participants seem to trust Black doctors more than doctors of other races.
The problem is that only 5% of doctors in the United States are Black. It's a lot of work put on a very small group of people.
But some Black healthcare professionals are stepping up.
I am Sonia Fuqua. I'm a registered nurse. And I know vaccines are safe.
That's a PSA that Fuqua recorded after she became one of the first 5 people in Mississippi to get vaccinated. Fuqua was thrilled to be a role model, not just for the Black community, but also for Black nurses. And when she shared her experience online, many people reached out to her.
Several people responded and said, because I saw you, I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Of course, she says, outreach isn't going to convince everyone.
It's not going to turn on a dime, but what works is working. You just need to continuously do it.
As for Mary Williams, the nurse who's not planning on getting a coronavirus vaccine, she says she'll become more trustworthy of the medical system if the attention on helping the Black community continues beyond the pandemic. For the Gulf States Newsroom, I'm Shalina Chetlani.
This story was produced as part of a regional collaboration with public media stations in Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. Shalina Chetlani with the Gulf States Newsroom joins me now.
Hey, Carl.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Shalina, one of the surprising findings is that frontline healthcare providers would seem to be anxious to get protection.
Yeah, it is kind of counterintuitive, right? But when I talked to some of the healthcare workers in the field who were all Black women, there were 2 things that I was hearing. So first, I'll preface this by saying that nothing gets approved by the FDA unless it goes through vigorous vetting, right, by the scientific community. But for some of these healthcare workers who've been embedded within medicine and the medical system for a long time, they know it takes a really long time for medicines to be approved. And this vaccine was developed under a program called Warp Speed. So for some healthcare workers, that doesn't really sit well with them. The other thing that I was hearing in particular from Black women in the healthcare field was that they often were seeing instances of systemic racism on the job. And that also impacted their feelings about trusting the medical system.
In your piece, you mentioned examples of medical racism throughout history and how that's factored into hesitancy. Remind us of some of the history behind this racism.
Sure. Well, one that we hear a lot in the news right now is the Tuskegee study. So this started in Tuskegee, Alabama in the 1930s. What happened was that Black men were left to suffer from syphilis for decades. Even after a cure was found, there was no informed consent. There are also other examples like James Marion Sims, who's known as the father of modern gynecology, but he actually developed techniques that were used on enslaved women in Alabama in the 1840s.
Now, ATC featured a story on this yesterday. All things considered, vaccine hesitancy is a national issue. But you focused on Mississippi in your story. Is this not maybe a regional issue? Do we have a sense of how many healthcare workers are actually getting the vaccine across the Gulf South?
Yeah, that's a great question. I did focus on Mississippi because that's where I was able to get some data from one of the largest hospitals in Mississippi that has around 10,000 staff members. And from that data, we were able to see that 60% of white staff decided to opt in to get vaccinated versus around 30% of Black staff members. So this is in keeping with the national survey that I looked at that said that, you know, across the country, about 35% of Black healthcare workers decided not to get the vaccine. So we are seeing a trend nationally, and especially in the South, where there are large populations of Black people. You know, if we look at different states like Louisiana, we see that, you know, only A chunk of the population has decided to get vaccinated, so about 17%, whereas Black residents make up about 32% of the population. So it is in keeping with a larger regional trend of hesitancy within the Black population.
Shalina Chatlani is a reporter with the Gulf States Newsroom. Shalina, thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Carl Lengel, and the weather has certainly been on our minds this week. We're going to check in with meteorologist Dan Holliday now about what's going on. Dan, thanks for taking some time with us today.
Absolutely, Carl. Thank you.
So it's February. We shouldn't be surprised by the cold weather, right? We have that over Mardi Gras. We have that all the time. But this year, it seemed particularly harsh. What happened over the last few days that this all fell out the way it did?
Well, what happened was we had an Arctic air mass that slid much further south in the country than it typically does. Now, there are times when we get the colder air this time of year, and it's here for maybe a day or so, and then it's out of here. But what happened was this polar air mass sort of got dislodged into the central part of the country. Then there was a reinforcing shot of colder air that came in over the weekend and also early this week. A blocking pattern in Canada and points to the north kept that air from retreating back to the north. So it just sort of sunk further south across the country and put people well into the deep freeze that typically don't get that cold and stay that cold that long. So that's what we experienced.
Now, today, we're about to experience almost spring-like conditions. Warm, some rain this afternoon, this evening, from one extreme to the next. How did that happen?
Well, we have systems that often do come in this time of year. This is a low-pressure system that's traveling primarily to our north. Folks in southeastern Arkansas on the northern edge of this are getting 4 to 8 inches of snow. They're not used to this at all. We're on the warmer side of it, thankfully, with the warmer air being pulled in from the Gulf. So it's coming in the form of showers and even a few thunderstorms and some heavier rainfall for a while through tonight. So that's really going to be the impact of this. And thankfully, our temperatures are well above freezing today, tonight, and early tomorrow. And that's what's keeping us in the what we call the warm sector and not in that frigid air mass.
But don't get too comfortable, because tomorrow we go back to winter again. What's in store for South Louisiana over the next 4 to 5 days here?
Well, we know yesterday we set a new record low. It got down to 25 in New Orleans, and that broke an old record that had been standing for years. It does not look like it's going to get that cold again on Thursday, but it will be cold enough. And when I say Thursday, I mean Thursday night, Friday morning. Our low temperature around 32 will likely be clearing on Friday night. And again, that will keep our temperatures. When you get a clear sky, that oftentimes drives temperatures down. So we'll likely see low 30s again Thursday night and Friday night. So that's what we can expect. Doesn't look like we'll fall into the 20s. So even though low 30s are cold, they're certainly not what we had earlier this week. And once we get past that, things are going to improve.
Pretty nice weekend in store, relatively speaking.
It really is. Yeah, in fact, on Saturday, we'll be back in the mid-50s, still very cool for us. That's about 10 degrees below normal. We're in the mid-60s on Sunday. Our average high this time of year is 66, and it looks like Monday and Tuesday will be very close to that as well.
Dan, thanks for your time today. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon.
That's right. Keep the scarf handy for the next couple of nights, though.
I really can't stay.
Betty, it's cold outside.
That was meteorologist Dan Holliday. You're listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Carl Lengel. 1 year ago, just as Mardi Gras was wrapping up, the news of the coronavirus was making it clear that our annual world-renowned festival was about to be identified as a hotspot, a super spreader. Louisiana became a petri dish for COVID, and for a couple of months, the world watched our state intently as health officials attempted to explain and control the pandemic spread. Eventually, the rest of the U.S. and the world caught up with and surpassed us, and most people began to take the pandemic seriously, despite its politicization by a host of misguided and misguiding people. Louisiana's hospitality industry took the brunt of the economic hit, and today, New Orleans Business Alliance CEO Quentin Messer Jr. joins us to talk about some good news. We're on the way back, despite a barren Mardi Gras fest this week. Quentin, thanks so much for joining us today. Quentin, thanks for taking some time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, a year ago, this didn't happen. The pandemic did not happen. The economic collapse did not happen. Where would New Orleans and the region be today, if that were the case?
A tremendous question. So, on an annual basis, carnival season, and I think what a lot of people have to realize, it's not just a New Orleans thing, it's a South Louisiana thing, it's almost a Gulf Coast thing. Probably in the New Orleans metro brings anywhere between $600 million to maybe $1.1 billion of economic impact. We welcome anywhere from 100,000 to 200,000 of our closest friends from across the world. So that means hotel rooms are being occupied. It means restaurants are being dined in. That means people are selling souvenirs. That means that there are people going through the turnstiles of the World War II Museum or the New Orleans Museum of Art. That means that Mardi Gras Indians are being able to perform and receive gratuities, and Frenchman Street is hopping. And I think the thing that all of us are realizing is that a pandemic, COVID-19, attacks socialization. And no city's economy is built upon intense tactile socialization the way New Orleans' economy is. And so we've lost that. And so we've done great with sort of the virtual, but having that and losing that in person is really what we lost.
Now, you talked about the socialization, and one of the offshoots of that is the job scale, how much people make in. Our fastest growing industries have always been kind of the low paying, the hotels and restaurants. They've added a lot of jobs in the last 5 or 6 years up until the pandemic. Education also added, but the high paying sectors, the medical sector and data and payroll processing, we've talked about those before. How have those fared in the last year or so?
So that's a great question. And I think what we've seen is across industries, whether it be tourism, hospitality, to high-tech data processing, back-office operations, software development, we have not seen wage growth match productivity gains. And so what we've seen is, unfortunately, too much wage compression across, whether it be skilled nurses, doctors, you name it, to folks who may work in tourism and hospitality. But what we realized over the year or so we've been dealing with COVID-19 is that there are certain industries that are more resistant to wage depression. That means those industries in which you can work remotely, software development. Unfortunately, too many of our educators have learned that they can teach remotely, although that takes away a lot of why people get into education, that human interaction. It's a very human, high-touch profession, high-energy profession, but at least you can do it somewhat remotely. And so what we've discovered is that they are the industries in the New Orleans economy in which you can work remotely, software development, payroll processing, back office, professional services, those have rebounded sooner than those that are more high-touch, like tourism, hospitality. The one thing I will say is we have an underrated healthcare delivery sector and an underrated higher ed sector. And higher ed is one of those sectors in which it's beyond just professors. There's a whole universe of jobs there. And because they were able to be in person, you had people being able to work and continue to support themselves, whether they were employees of Dillard, Xavier, Tulane, Loyola, UNO, New Orleans Baptist, SUNO, University of Holy Cross, or Delgado. So we need to be very thankful and grateful for our higher ed sector as well as our healthcare delivery sector.
A year from now, we have vaccine immunity, herd immunity. What do we look like? There's been no pandemic for the next year. The economy has begun to recover. What does the region look like at that point?
It's the question that keeps me up at night. I believe that we will be on the road to recovery. We will have a Mardi Gras the way that we knew prior to it, although I suspect some people will wear masks. And I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way. But I think what we need to understand and separate out is that a lot of what our economy is built on are large meetings and conventions and the business traveler. And I think the piece that people are beginning to realize is that this pandemic has also, and we see this with the weather tragedy that's being played out across our country and here in our region, people are now thinking about climate change, and climate change is changing consumer behavior, and there needs to be a transition from our transition and working with the fossil fuels industry. But I think next year people are going to think about how many meetings can I really or do I need to attend in person? How many conferences do I need to attend in person? So I don't think it's going to be an immediate snapback. I think it's going to be a little bit longer. I think, you know, maybe by 2023, you may see things return. But I do think because of the extreme weather, we can show causality to climate change. There has to be market-based approaches. There certainly are going to be changing behavior. And the one thing that I will say locally is that I think as more and more people examine whether animal-based agriculture is a big cause of climate change and emissions, it could change the dining palate. And in a city that's built on food and cuisine, we need to really be thinking about that and working with our restaurateurs and our food industry to be prepared for people looking for more vegan or vegetarian or plant-based substitutes or even chemically developed meat substitutes or protein substitutes.
Quentin, you always are able to bring the big picture down to the table in front of us, and I thank you for your time today. It's always good to talk to you.
Hey, thank you so much. Continue to stay safe.
New Orleans Business Alliance CEO Quentin Messer. You've been listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Carl Lengel. That is our show today. Thanks to our guests, Gulf State Newsroom reporter Shalina Chatlani, meteorologist Dan Holliday, and New Orleans Business Alliance CEO Quentin Messer Jr. Thanks also today to our producer, Elena Klein, and our engineer, Garrett Pittman. Tomorrow's Louisiana Considered comes to you again at 12 noon. Coming up on WRKF and WWNO this afternoon, Ask the Governor at 2 o'clock, All Things Considered at 3, and regional news stories we're following include, of course, the fish kills and the weather. The weather just continues to make news this week. On All Things Considered, you'll hear about some Twitter problems in India, and more on the rift inside the GOP. This is 89.9 WWNO in New Orleans and 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Carl Lengel. This is Louisiana Considered, and I'd just like to end with one little thought for you. Don't let the story lie and keep looking for the truth. Louisiana Considered, it's 12:31, and here and now just ahead.